Good morning and welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, partner in charge of the IBM Center for the Business of Government. We created the center in 1998 to encourage discussion and research to new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center and our programs by visiting us on the web at www.businessofgovernment.org. The Business of Government Hour features a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. Our special guest this morning is Dr. Elia Zerhouni, Director of the National Institutes of Health. Good morning, Dr. Zerhouni.
Good morning. How are you, Paul?
Great. And joining us in our conversation also from IBM is Tony Hess. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning, Paul.
Dr. Zerhouni, let's start by setting the context. Could you give us a little bit on the history and the mission of the National Institutes of Health, or NIH?
Sure. The National Institutes of Health are the primary biomedical research agency for the country. And they have existed actually for quite a while, 116 years. And I'm the 15th director of the NIH. And the NIH represents a conglomeration of about 27 institutes and centers, each specialized in one area or another of biomedical research. We employ about 28,000 employees, and we have a budget of about $28.8 billion. And the thing that is interesting about this is that we fund research across the entire United States. We have about 212,000 scientists funded by NIH at over 2,800 institutions across the United States, universities, medical schools, laboratories, research institutes, and that's what we do.
In terms of the listeners, what institutes would come to top of mind if they were to think about the NIH?
Most people understand that we are fighting diseases. So most institutes that are well known are the institutes that are in the front line of fighting cancer. So the National Cancer Institute is well known. The National Heart and Lung and Blood Institute, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. These are the institutes that tend to be well known. But we have others that are not as well known, but are very critical. The National Library of Medicine provides all of the medical information needed for both research and medical practice. We have the National Center for Research Resources. They play a very critical role in making sure that we have the right technologies for doing biomedical research. So it's a complex organization. It's not a simple agency, if you will.
And speaking of complexity, how's the budget allocated amongst the institutes?
10% of our budget, about $2.7 billion, is dedicated to what we do ourselves within the government laboratories that are located within the NIH. We have about 6,000 scientists working on things that only the government can really do well. For example, developing novel vaccines, ensuring the safety of the blood supply, and discovering new ways, for example, of treating cancer. So we have about 10% of our budget in what we call intramural research. And 85% of our budget is in what we call extramural research. We spend about 4% of our budget on management and all of the support services that we need. So when you look at the agency, that's really the combination of things. Now, in the institutes, priority settings and funding levels have been determined in part by history. For example, the war on cancer in 1971 that was declared by the then President Nixon increased the budget of the National Cancer Institute. So the National Cancer Institute has a budget of almost $5 billion. And over time, history determines what increases in budgets. For example, last year, I launched what I call the Trans-NIH Plan for Obesity Research because of the public health importance of obesity. And we've dedicated a large amount of dollars and increased that by 10% just last year. So that you can see how priorities are made according to public health demand, cancer, for example, rising, or infectious diseases now, or diabetes. Second is scientific opportunity. So when we know that something may work and is mature in the laboratory, then we pour a lot of money in trying to translate that into real drugs or medicine or a preventative approaches. So that's what happens. It's a dynamic process. But all of it is driven by a combination of scientific peer review, programmatic priorities, public health needs, and more importantly, scientific opportunity, because there's no sense spending money on something you don't understand. So you need to do that.
Can you tell us a little bit about your role and responsibilities as the director of the NIH?
Right. So I'm a presidential appointee. I'm nominated by the president and confirmed by the Senate. And my role is essentially to be the overall director for all of the institutes. And my primary role is clearly a strategic one. Where does the agency need to go? How do we organize and manage the agency in a way that's most effective? How do we communicate with the many constituencies? A lot of my job is communications, communications with Congress, communications with the Senate, the House, the various committees, communications inside the administration, with other agencies of the government, and more importantly is communications with the patient advocacy community, the university community, and so on. So I would say a lot of my job is communications. 25% perhaps. 25% is strategic planning and strategic visioning so that you bring people on board. And 50% is truly management of the agency and appropriate allocation of resources. And one thing that I consider the most important part of my job is recruiting the best and brightest people I can recruit. So since I've become director, I've recruited 8 new directors of institutes since 2002. And I consider that the most important job for the NIH director, get the best.
Quite a range of skills. Perhaps you could tell us a little bit about some of the positions you had prior to becoming the director.
Being an NIH director is unique. I mean, there's no job like it. Prior to that, I was the executive dean of the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine. And I was also chair of a large department called the Department of Radiology and Radiological Sciences. And before that, I was basically in the laboratories. My work has been focused essentially on developing modern medical imaging technologies like CAT scanners and MRI scanners. That's my area of research. So I have an interesting combination. I understand biology and engineering as well, and I have quantitative sciences and biological sciences background. The experience that helped me the most was managing a large medical school, but I also had private activities in terms of launching companies based on some of my inventions. I've had several patents. So I gain a lot of insight in what happens really when you want to go from basic discovery to making something happen. And I bring that perspective, I think, as a director.
What drew you to public service?
Personal factors, I think, more than anything else. First of all, I'm an immigrant. I came to this country when I was 24 years of age, and I have to say that only in America could someone like me, you know, become professor at Johns Hopkins and chair and dean. And so I thought it was time to pay back. And when the call came, I knew the challenges. I knew it was going to be a very tough job. But, you know, you only get called once in your lifetime, and I think it's important to do it. So, and if there was one agency in the world that I would do it for, is really NIH. I mean, NIH, if you think about it, in medicine, we've funded and trained over 105 Nobel Prizes. All of my contributions to science have come through the support and understanding of scientists and administrators at NIH. So to me, it was like a step up, because I think there's nothing like NIH, really.
When you were referring to your management experience, you said it helped that you had been chair or led a department. What did you mean by that?
Well, I think when you're a scientist, you tend to, in fact, ignore or even not pay a lot of attention to management issues. You think that because you have such a logical mind that basically if you just say what you think loud enough, people will line up and believe in what you say and just do what you say. And I think there's a very common misunderstanding about the need to align people, the need to really win the intellectual debate first and foremost before just thinking you own the truth. And I think management experience at the level of being a chair, and the Department of Radiology at Hopkins is actually quite large, had over 800 employees and over 100 physicians and scientists working. And I have to say, you have to make all the mistakes to be made early on before you take on something like the NIH. And I think that's what I mean by prior experience. I knew how not to get burned, I guess. I didn't know maybe how to do the job, but I think I knew how the difficulties that you have. So being a chair, I think, is a very good stepping stone to do something.
I don't
yes.
know if this is true, but I perceive it to be true, which is probably per capita you have more advanced degrees than any other organization in government. Are there additional complexities dealing with such a highly educated team?
What it requires you to do is to come up with very different models of governance, very different models of decision-making. And when you have a workforce that is a knowledge-based workforce, the only way you can truly lead is by bringing knowledge to the forefront, having an open environment where you share the information. My experience with this milieu of highly intelligent people is that if you do not bring intellectual horsepower on the table and facts, then you really can't lead that organization. Organizations like this need to be convinced. And 95% of the time, if you bring data, they're data-driven, people will converge towards an optimal solution. That is different than any other organization that I've worked with before.
That's an interesting point about the data and the conversion. NIH has a new public access policy. What is it and why is it important? We'll ask Dr. Elias Zerhouni, NIH Director, to take us through this when the Business of Government Hour continues.